Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:52 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 20th, and of course it was the Fed's announcement day, with Janet Yellen stealing the headlines for just about everything. And here's the euro down to 118.89, down over 1 cent. And it's been pausing here around this 120 area for much of the month to date. And when we think about that, the Europeans can't be particularly happy with the strength of the currency. And there has been an almost unrequiting downtrend in the dollar this year. And one has to question whether, to the extent to which that is backed up by fundamentals. The only real hard fundamental in the currency markets is the interest rate differential. And the Europeans are in no hurry to raise interest rates, whereas what the Fed was saying today was that they're going to raise interest rates again by the end of the year, potentially by three times next year. But what they did do was that they scaled back what they thought would be the peak of their interest rate hiking cycle, which is at a risible 2.75%. When we think about it in those sorts of terms, then even that, even though their eventual end game is to get it up towards 3%, that's still an interest rate differential versus the euro of a couple of hundred basis points in the next couple of years. It would suggest that there is ample potential for some unwinding of the euro's really rather spectacular rally so far this year, and potentially a pullback towards the upper side of its range, the underlying range, which is somewhere around 115, 116. And if we flip that around and look at it on the dollar index on the same basis, then it was at a new reaction low. It is rallying now. It hasn't quite yet broken the progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of the year. But if it can follow through on the upside next week, then we have the potential that this is a failed downside break, and that would at least open up the potential that we're going to get back up and test the region of the trend mean, and potentially even back up towards 100, considering that if an adage, or I guess a rule of thumb from the chart seminar, is that if the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakdown, then the chances are that it is going to go back up and test the upper side of the range. So what happens next for the dollar is going to be rather interesting. What was, I think, quite interesting as well today was that the pound was held on to the vast majority of its gains. It was in quite strong positive territory earlier on and gave up most of it, but it didn't pull back very sharply. And there is, and obviously, when we get back to the hard fundamentals of currency markets, then the pound is the region where people believe that will be the next place to raise interest rates. So then that interest rate differential is less likely to be wide versus the pound than it is against the euro. When we look at the Fed's balance sheet, there were a number of things that I think really are worth considering at this stage. The Fed's balance sheet has been static for 2.5 years, and it's at $4.47 trillion. And they're going to withdraw about $10 billion out of it next month. So that's very small, and they're going to be incredibly cautious, because we know what happened with the ECB. What I found interesting was that in an article I was reading today, they said, oh, that the Fed is going to be the first central bank to withdraw liquidity following quantitative easing, but that's not the case. The ECB tried it back in 2012, and they successfully withdrew €1 trillion from circulation. They took the size of the balance sheet down from 3 to 2 trillion, and in the process, they initiated a deflationary cycle within the eurozone that required a quantitative easing program that doubled the size of their balance sheet subsequently. So the Fed has to be aware of what the potential consequences are. And there is this argument going on right now, because if we look at the Fed funds rate, and it has been rising modestly, and it is due to rise again, but it's at 1.25%, whereas when we look at the 3-month treasury bill, then we're at just over 1%. So what does that tell us? It tells us that the bond market is unwilling to give any credit to the Fed. They are unwilling to believe that the Fed is going to be able to continue to raise interest rates. And that's why I've referred to it as the boy who cried wolf market, because the Fed has been saying for years that it was going to raise interest rates, that it anticipated it was going to be raising interest rates in a more aggressive manner, and then it never did it. But they've been raising interest rates all year, and they want to do it again, and that could take it up to 1.5%. So when we look at the chart, we can see, for example, that it has broken out. There's a progression of higher reaction lows. It's been going sideways, and that's unwinding the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. But that the trajectory is higher, and we're coming off of extraordinarily low levels. But it is lagging the Fed funds rate, and the bond market is looking at the same data as the Fed, and the Fed is concluding that they have to raise interest rates because they're going to be there's going to be a recession at some point in the future, and they need to be able to cut interest rates when that occurs. So that means they have to raise them now, and they are faced with this dilemma because they've printed so many bonds that when those bonds start to roll over, and there are some significant rollovers in terms of a lot of the debt was with 10-year maturities, so it starts rolling over in 2018, but most particularly in 2019 and 2020, when a lot of that debt, especially when we think back to when was QE2 and QE3, then that means that a lot, if that was 10-year maturities, we're talking about 2019, 20, and 21. Well, the Treasury is going to have to refinance that debt, and it's going to come in if the Fed is in fact correct and that they are going to be able to raise interest rates. They're going to be refinancing it at significantly higher levels, and that is going to represent a headwind for the economy, and most particularly for the government. So that is why they're beginning to tinker with the size of the balance sheet, because if they can withdraw some of the bonds from circulation, then they don't have to be refinanced, and it takes some of the pressure off of the Treasury. So that's reasonable. That is why the Fed is doing what it's doing. But what the bond market seems to be telling us is that they don't believe it's possible. And that's rather interesting, because in the stock market, we're told don't fight the Fed. But the bond market believes that it knows better, and that they're betting that one of the things that Yellen said was quite interesting. What she said was that the FOMC has to figure out whether the downward pressure on inflation is in fact transitory. What the bond market is actually betting on is that it is not transitory, that these are not just cyclical factors, but that they're secular factors. That perhaps it is that you've got so many baby boomers are retiring that they're not spending, that you don't have the uptick in jobs that is creating a spending boom from millennials, at least just not just yet, because they've delayed family formation. So there are these arguments, but of course then there is what's happening in the stock market, and the stock market was able to rally off its low in here today, and the S&P 500 has held its move above that psychological 2500 level. If we look at it on a very long-term basis, then it paused around 1500, it paused around 2000, and we've been pausing over the last 3 months around 2500. It's pausing around these big psychological levels. But as long as the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The relative weakness of the euro should be beneficial for European stock markets. So they were pretty mixed in here today, and the IBEX in particular was down. But the DAX index, and again, if we look at it on a very long-term basis, it certainly had a bigger hiccup around 2015 because of the devaluation of the euro. But it has a broadly similar pattern to the S&P 500 in that it completed a very lengthy range in 2013, and it has continued to advance since. And it has paused at 8,000, 10,000, and 12,000. So again, we are getting these moves that are pausing it around big psychological levels. And by and large, that is that is not particularly strange. We see that quite often. Then when we look at the gold market, because the dollar has been firming up and it is really quite oversold, so there is ample potential for additional upside. Well, then gold today has pulled all the way back to $1,300. That represents the upper side of the underlying range. But gold is volatile. It's volatile both on the upside and the downside, and a clear upward dynamic is going to be required to confirm that demand is coming back to dominance in this area. It hasn't quite unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. That potentially says that it could pull back by another $40, and even then, that would begin to suggest that we've had a failed upside break. So it could open up the potential for additional downside. So again, people are looking at this range, and they've been getting progressively more bullish as it got up to the to test the 2016 peak. But when we look at it from the weekly basis, we can see that the most important thing that happened was that big break on the upside in early 2016, and now we are in this period of right-hand extension. And that is generally characterized by volatility, by peak-to-trough swings that are nail-biting, and we are coming down off the upper side of the range, and so far we haven't yet had evidence that support has been found. And until we have that evidence, then it is really for the bulls to prove their case. And while gold was rallying for much of the last few months, oil has been pretty moribund. Now, I think it's quite interesting today that West Texas Intermediate has finally been able to sustain a move above $50. It's tried for the last four sessions and been unable to hold the gain, but today it has held the move above $50, and it is now breaking the progression of lower rally highs. Brent crude has been outperforming by a fairly considerable margin, and it was up over a dollar in here today. That broke its progression of lower rally highs a couple of weeks ago already, and it is already pushing back up towards this $60 area. Now, of course, we know that a great deal of unconventional supply becomes economic around these levels, but until we and that would suggest that as prices move back up towards 60, that more supply is going to come into the market. But the other way of thinking about it is that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and with just about all economies, especially the major ones, in expansion mode, that's generally speaking positive for commodity demand, industrial resources demand. So that should represent a tailwind for the oil price. What is interesting is that the iron ore price has been pulling back, and it has been hitting headlines because of the fact that it was quite overbought in the short term, and it has been unwinding that. What I think is interesting is that it is now back in the region of the trend mean, and if we're going to have a continued upward bias to trading, then this is around the area where it should find support. What that has contributed to has been a little bit of weakness coming through in some of the industrial resources, but they were a bit firmer in here today in line with that iron ore price. And when we look at it on the weekly basis, then BHP Billiton, for example, was all the way up to 1500p, and that has represented resistance on now three occasions since 2015. And it was due a little to consolidation, and it has got it. And now, if it's going to find support, well, this would be a very handy area for that to occur. Glencore, which had surged through the 350p area, pulled back very violently last week, but has paused in here right now. And certainly, there is still an overbought condition evident on the chart, but that 350p area has been a rather interesting area of resistance. So it will be interesting now to see whether it can hold this level. And by and large, when we look at what is performing in here, it is generally speaking cyclical sectors. Cyclical really means that those that are heavily leveraged to global growth, not specifically that they get these lumpy periods of earnings growth when things do rather well, and when the global economy is not growing in a synchronized fashion, then their earnings are not quite as good. And banks fall into that category as well. And the S&P 500 banks index has been consolidating in an orderly manner all of this year, and now it is pushing up towards the upper side of that range, and it looks like increasingly likely that it is going to successfully break on the upside. So that's rather encouraging. And when we look at the European banking sector, it is being led higher by French banks like BNP Paribas, which has broken up out of a long-term base. But when we look at it just on the long-term chart over the course of the decade, we can see that there is a base formation in evidence. It has been really incredibly volatile, but the lower side of the range is around 75. The upper side of the range is 175, and we're currently around 133, and the index is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. What is, I think, also important is the constituents of this index. It is dominated by the Spanish, Italian, and French banks. There are now only two listed German banks, despite the fact that it is the biggest economy by a long stretch in Europe. All of them have been nationalized except for Deutsche and Commerzbank. So when we look at the European banking sector, what we're really looking at is the French and then the periphery. When you just simply look at the constituents, there's an awful lot of Banco Banca and UniCredit, UniCredito, Intesa, Mediobanca. These are all Italian banks, and they are major constituents. When you start to aggregate them all together, it's basically France, Spain, and Italy make up the entire Eurozone's banking sector. So what this chart is really telling us about is how those banking sectors are doing. It really doesn't give us any indication, really, about what's going on in the wider sense of what people are really doing with their money in terms of the banking sector. But considering that those regions were some of the hardest hit and that this index is on a recovery trajectory, it does suggest that the ECB's policy of massive monetary accommodation is working, that it at least in how they measure it, which is in the health of the banking sector and keeping a lot of these banks afloat. And with the dollar strengthening up in here, the Nikkei is now above the 20,000 level, and it is at a new recovery high, at least for the year. It hasn't quite taken out the peaks that we saw in 2015, but this is rather positive action. And the yen, which has been strengthening up for much of this year, is looking like we're at least going to get it back up towards that 115 area. If the dollar can sustain a move above 115, well, then that is going to suggest that we are back in a period of medium-term demand dominance rather than short-term steadying. And that could act as a significant bullish catalyst for the Nikkei. When we start taking it all together, the modest pace of interest rate hikes, even for the US, which is well ahead of the curve relative to everyone else, suggests that we are still in an accommodative environment. And the fact that the bond market doesn't even believe that they're going to be able to continue to raise interest rates is contributing to a rather sanguine environment for stocks. And in the absence of top formation development, and I don't see any evidence of it just yet, then we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And with that, I will wish all the best to all of you.